3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned.
There is a place where time stands still, where nature is harsh and demanding, where only the quick and the strong and the deadly can survive. This place is no place for civilized man.
I want my life.
Kick it in the guts, Barry.
All you've got to do now is pass the Australian culture test. Three simple questions, three correct answers,
did you get all this
and
together?
You go through that doorway to the greatest little country in the world.
Good morning once again. This is Annie for Showreel, and we look at the Australian film industry and things that happen in it in terms of technical people, what they do, and films that are made, and festivals. Although, of course, festivals are usually the purview of my sister program On Screen on Saturday. Today I had a chance to have a chat with Samuel Van Grinsven. He is a New Zealand-Australian filmmaker. This is his second film. It's called Went Up the Hill, and it's got some mega stars in it. It's got Darka Montgomery and Vicky Cripps, and it's got some pretty fabulous backup support actors as well. And yes, you're right, it does heavily rely on the Jack and Jill mythology, because, of course, Darka is Jack and Vicky Cripps is Jill. Now, it is set in New Zealand, and it's built around the concept of two strangers, really, who attend the funeral of Jack's mother, who he has never met, or, you know, can't remember, and he's been fostered out, and her partner who is grieving after the death of her wife. It is a very creepy and very interesting film, I'll have to say, and apparently Hoyts has picked it up. And you can go online and find various places where you can have access to see the film. It was on at MIFF, Melbourne International Film Festival, and I got to see it there at the Capitol, as you'll hear in the conversation. And the Q&A was with Darka. It was a pretty interesting Q&A. But I got a chance to speak to the director Samuel. So here we go. This is the chat I had with Samuel Van Grinsven.
G'day, Sam. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm all right. I saw the screening of the film the other day at Melbourne International Film Festival.
And at the Capitol.
Yeah, at the Capitol, which is a great, fine place to watch a film. This is your second film, and you said it was your last whistle stop on tour for festivals. Tell me about the experience of taking this film around to festivals.
It's been amazing. We world premiered at Toronto International Film Festival last year, which was a really special screening. Our lead actress, Vicky Cripps, she has a process where she writes an original song for each film, for each character that she plays. And we surprised the audience in Toronto where she performed it over the end credits live. So that was a really special first screening and first way to put the film out into the world. And yes, since then, it's just been really fascinating to kind of share it in different parts of the world and, you know, with all kinds of different audiences, whether it's like an audience that is Luxembourgish, like we screened in Vicky Cripps' home city, and, you know, the way in which they interpret the film is different. And then sometimes it's a younger crowd who you know, kind of drawn to the film from Loving Stranger Things. And, yeah, a hometown crowd in New Zealand. Like it's different every time, and it's always fun. Like when you, especially when there's a Q&A, because you get to kind of hear the different interpretations based on people's background or people's ages, and yeah, it's great.
Yeah, well, one of the things that's pretty interesting about the film, of course, is I mean, there's a lot of things that are interesting about this film because there's lots of things about the genre twist, as you talked about, that the people welcome this ghost who becomes much more malevolent, well, psychopathic, really, sociopathic. It's a sociopathic personality, which these people are. So it's an investigation of trauma and your own part in it, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's no, I found that quite an interesting thing. It wasn't entirely conscious, and then you kind of get to a part in the writing where, you're being forced to talk about it more. Like it stops being maybe less organic, and you're being questioned on it and grilled on it. And it struck me that, like, oh, that is different. That th this is yes, this film is playing with like elements of thriller and elements of horror, but it's not, it's a ghost story. It's not really properly existing in those genres. But what's different is that this is a ghost that they're willingly inviting into their body. And more specifically, like as in the way in which that's speaking to theme or to trauma itself as a theme, is it's the abused welcoming the abuser into their bodies as this ultimate act of sometimes in the film like wish fulfillment,
Or
but also
submission.
or submission, absolutely. And that was just quite interesting territory to play with. In a genre sense or in a craft sense, but more importantly, in a human sense. Like that might feel like an abstract concept, but it's actually quite true to real life in the way in which, we seek out like dangerous or negative behaviors or transgression over and over and over again, until we can find a way to break the cycle. And that felt very honest to me.
And understanding it. But, and so, of course, the filmmaking itself is exploring this. One of the things that I really loved about it was the way the quality of the film, the images and the landscape are like they've been etched. It's like it's e an etching, right? You've done it on purpose. Tell me about that.
No, absolutely. So the film has a really, it's shot in Canterbury High Country in New Zealand, so about an hour out of Christchurch, 2 hours out of Christchurch, and the color palette is very severe in this film. It's very strict, but it's not contrived. It's real, like as in like in winter in New Zealand. It's like the life gets stripped out of the world. It's these gray, like these dark brown tussocks and this volcanic rock and these elements of charcoal and snow. So like it's almost like your world verges on grayscale. And that felt very kind of true to grief to me. And I was very compelled by that. So yeah, we very much invited that in, but that what you're describing is that sense of like the etching. A lot of that for me comes from when I knew I was going to return to home to New Zealand to make my second film, I like asked myself, as you do, like, what version of it am I trying to bring to the screen? Plenty of films have been made in New Zealand. Like, what am I trying to do? And a lot of my memories are like early childhood memories at the back of looking at the back of a tour bus or a van driving through that landscape, and like my imagination as a kid playing in response to that landscape. So I wanted to bring to the screen quite a fantastical, childlike, naive version of the landscape that really made you feel like you were inside a nursery rhyme or a storybook. And that's why we always play with this, like it's real, but it almost looks slightly off.
Because it looks like Albert Abdura. It really does. It's like he stepped into an etching, which is fantastic. But the other thing that you do, and they don't do generally when it comes to the beautiful landscape of New Zealand, is that you keep the camera static, and so the people are moving within the landscape. This is really fascinating.
Yeah, I'm just drawn to it. Always have my first my I may have only made two films, so I can't say always, but my across my first two films, I'm really drawn to stillness in camera, and especially for this film, I tried to really ramp that to another level because it's a film dealing with control but the source of that control, this quite dominant and oppressive personality, is a character that you never get to really meet as an audience. You get to meet her through this mode of possession, but you never really get to truly know or see the real her. So I had to use every tool in my toolkit to evoke the feeling that she would have evoked in real life to the audience. And a way of doing that is to make the audience feel quite trapped in the strictness of the camera language. And I think what it also adds to in taking that approach is that I think the film has this real sense of like unearned intimacy. Like you as an audience have walked in on a conversation you weren't invited to and you're not welcome at. And yeah, I always love how like choices with the camera language can really mess with the audience.
And it's the same with the beginning. You do it with the beginning of the film. I mean, I'm sitting there watching it and thinking, oh my God, this is fancy living in a house like that. Oh my God. It's horrendous.
Yeah, I mean, it's not.
I mean, it's beautiful, but it's horrendous.
Yeah, it's not a very welcoming kind of interior environment. But that was really interesting to me. Like, I feel like that spoke like our deceased character, our ghostly character. She's an architect, so she designed the setting in which our characters live, and I think it just spoke so much to the fact that this is the world she wanted to create for her and her partner. Yeah, it's interesting.
I know. It's like white mice within a frame, and it's fantastic.
Absolutely.
It's
and fantastic. And we try and evoke that, like the shots throughout the film of like the model of the original model of the house, and it was like exactly what you're saying, was to try and create the sense of like they're almost like they're little, like two little puppets kept in her house.
Yeah, and the fact that people came to, I mean, this god-awful woman had people who came to her memorial, which means that she'd populated her world with a whole lot of enablers because she was an artiste.
Yes, yeah, and those scenes are kind of quite important because our protagonist, Jack, played by Dacre, he's really a blank canvas when it comes to his relationship with his mother. So every time he hears like a whisper about her, he takes it as like gospel truth. And that was like quite interesting to play with in a funeral setting with a character like this and the funeral taking place inside a home that she created, because he's not filtering like what's opinion or like what someone speaking in reverence to her because she was a great artist and maybe they worked for her and feared her or respected her. But he's just taking all the pieces he wants to form a collage of like the dream version of his mother. And therefore, to his detriment along the way, is missing all the signs of who she actually was.
That's right. And it's like, it's the house itself is like a gloved hand holding them. It's quite amazing. And the thing that I found really fascinating about the Q&A that you had at the end of the film the other day that I saw was the way Dacre described the two lead actors, because they used scent to evoke the characters. And they didn't, he also talked about how they didn't, because you see, it's a three-hander. It's them and the ghost, but we never meet the ghost. We only see the ghost through them. But they didn't play the ghost. They played their interpretation of that ghost, which is what you're talking about. Is that fascinating?
Yeah. It was so interesting to watch. Like, you know, I think you go into that with like loose expectations or plans about how to achieve that, but I mean, it's not something you can nail down at all. And it just evolved constantly on set. Like, it became more and more interesting and more stripped back and really just this projection of like a version of the person that both of them needed to confront and deal with in order to let go of this person. And therefore, it was quite, hypnotizing to be around on set, to be honest. Like, the watching them shift into this other character, it was quite like almost like you were in a trance on set watching them do it, because it was all from within them.
So you created the space for them all to do it, and then you've got these glorious actors doing this thing.
I was so fortunate to have two actors who were so daring. And so like running toward it. But yeah, it was one of those like just elusive kind of performance things where I didn't know that it was going to 100% work until Vicky rounded the corner in the first shot as this ghostly character. And my producers grabbed me behind the monitor and were like squeezing me, being like, oh my God, she's here. And I was like, I guess we did it. It worked.
She is a fantastic actor. I've been watching her through, I mean, she's made a variety of pretty amazing films. And most recently are Corsage, The Phantom's Thread, Bergen Island, but a whole range of things. And obviously, Dacre's pretty well known as well. But how did you, Dacre is Australian, but Vicky is European or international. How did you attract these people to your project?
Yeah, it was it's honestly one of those like stars align kind of moments. It's it was a combination of like timing and the screenplay. You know, I'm really proud of that screenplay. It's quite unique as a screenplay. It's very poetic, it's very visual. Because of the sort of, I know I won't spoil things, but the rules of the world create some sort of obstacles to language in the film. They have to speak in a certain way. And that created this really interesting kind of staccato rhythm. And you know, that would definitely intimidate some actors, but I was really aiming toward actors who I really respected and I know were quite daring. And I think for Vicky specifically, and she's spoken about this in relation to the film, the script arrived to her at a moment where a lot of the themes it was dealing with and the sense of grief and of loss, and it was very palpable to her, and it was something that she was ready to deal with and ready to confront. And I think for both Dacre and Vicky, making this film in tandem but also solo, much like their characters, it was healing. And what more can you wish for as a director and a writer? Like, that's a dream.
Oh yeah, say that again. Amazing. How long was the shoot?
About 5.5 weeks. It was pretty quick.
Well, yeah, very quick, but talk about Kona Silence stuff.
You must, yes.
What was that like?
Everything that the characters are going through of being trapped in a very remote, extremely cold, and single location is what we were going through as a crew and as a cast. It was, you know, it was tough. It was really tough. And it's an interesting film in a way to make in a practical sense, because it's a three-hander but told with two actors, you don't get that sort of burst of new energy by the introduction of different cast every few days of shooting. You know, it's really just Dacre and Vicky, and that creates a whole lot of different things that are beautiful but also are challenging. You know, it takes a great degree of trust and patience in one another and as a team, and also a real sense of focus to keep it alive and to keep it real and organic, with the fact that it's like you're not having this new location to inspire you every day, or this new crazy kind of camera technique or challenge or stunt or something like that, like, or a different actor. It's like you have to really stay in it to keep it going, and that was challenging but also quite rewarding.
Yeah, well, I suppose they're a classic case of actors liking to act. And yeah. Dacre actually said that because of the strangeness of the house, which is a mirror image of itself, that the two of them didn't actually communicate, except during the shoot, which is pretty interesting, because it's about, I was thinking about strangers and humanity and communal connection. That's an exploration that we're going through in this film.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was really interesting. Like, and that wasn't something that was like, again, it wasn't contrived or considered. It just naturally happened that the two of them, they had no connection to each other before we shot the film. They met, you know, in rehearsal, and then their processes and their backgrounds as actors are worlds apart. They come from different schools of acting or different thoughts of acting and different experiences of acting, and in different parts of the world. And I think something, I mean, it's one of those things that I can't really pin down why it happened, but I think what it, maybe what the organic or like instinctual result of it was that these are two characters in the film that meet as strangers, and because they're using each other's bodies to talk to someone else, they retain being strangers for a vast majority of the film. Compared to a normal film, a huge portion of the film, these two like really don't know anything about one another, despite being the two lead characters. And Vicky and Dacre's approach to like really their relationship only existing on screen and not off screen, it retained that weird tension that exists between two people who don't know each other very well. And it meant that it kept coming up on screen. And that really worked. And then it was really interesting watching them like properly get to know each other at Toronto.
Which is funny too, because of course, then of course, even though they're strangers, they have human responsibility for each other,
Yes,
which is
absolutely.
very touching. It's
Yeah.
extremely touching. The other thing is the I, as a child, always had a love affair with fairy tales, and I mean grim fairy tales,
Yeah.
not the other type of fairy tales,
Yeah.
because they're so incredible in one. The construction of the story, but also the ferocity of the messages
Yes.
and the characters within them.
Yes.
Obviously, this is why you called it "Went Up the Hill," and I almost jolted when you when they were called Jack
Yeah.
and Jill. I just thought, oh my God. So what I'm interested in is your relationship to fairy tales, the landscape, and the throwing us back to Europe, the hegemony of Hume, European grandiosity, which
Yeah.
that's what I see fairy tales are. I see
Yeah.
fairy tales as being the core heart, the beating heart of their civilization. But of course, we're not in that world, but in your film. So we've got this dissonance going on. It's
Yeah.
really fascinating.
Yeah. I was definitely like always drawn to them as a kid. And yeah, I mean, because of the way that I kind of grew up, like we grew up on the road. My parents were traveling musicians, and well, my family business is like sort of traveling musicians. And it meant that like, you know, I spent a lot of time like in my head and like but also like surrounded by people who they're professional impersonators, so they became someone else every night. So like in a way, I feel like kind of like a lot of like fantastical things kind of existed in my life because people didn't have like one identity. You know, they had multiple identities. And yeah, like for me, it was like specifically that tension that exists in like grim fairy tales or in nursery rhymes where they're both an act of like love and caring between parent and child, like whether it's to lull a child into sleep or it's like, you know, shared around a campfire as like to spark their imagination or like elicit a response from them. But they're also cautionary tales, which is another layer of parenting, right? It's like a warning or like a lesson. And that just felt like such amazing territory to dive into in a genre sense and in a ghost sense, because this film is so connected to the idea of the maternal or like the absence of a familial figure. And to keep it in this space that was like quite childlike in a lot of ways. Like I think moments in the film, Vicky and Dacre's relationship shifts from like mother and son to naughty siblings to childlike, like almost adolescent or something like that. And yeah, I think that's where like kind of the nursery rhyme and fairy tale exists for me.
Thanks for talking to me.
My pleasure. It was lovely to talk to you, Annie. Thank you.
Well, there you go. And it is an interesting film. Went Up the Hill. And he is a very interesting fellow, Samuel Van Grimsven. This is his second film. And I'm assuming we're going to see great things from him because he is a magician. The way he thinks and the way he actually gains a result from his filmmaking. As I said, Hoyts is carrying it, but you can go online and see how you can access the film. It is creepy and very interesting and worth seeing. Coming up next is Published or Not, and we're going to go out with the lovely song that we were listening to before we started the program was Party Tricks by Alice Skye, and we're going to go out with Adelita, Jewel Thief.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au. You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.